Okay, so this is Parshas Vayakhel in the Meshech Chochma. We spoke last week in Parshas Kisisa, the Meshech Chochma had an Arichus. We spoke about Shabbos, because Shabbos comes up in Parshas Kisisa. Shabbos, as we know, comes up again in Parshas Vayakhel, even though most of the Parsha... Right, we'll talk about that, right, the placement. But, right before we get to the bulk of the Parsha, which is about the Asiyas HaMishkan, the making of the Mishkan, there are three psukim right at the beginning that talk about Shabbos. Vayakhel Moshe kol adas bnei Yisrael vayomer aleihem ein ladvarim asher tziva Hashem la'asos osam. Sheshes yomim te'asem melacha. Work should be done for 6 days. Vayomer ashvi yelachem kodesh. Shabbos shabbosin la'ashem. On the seventh day should be a holy day for you. Shabbos to Hashem. Kol ha'osevo melacha yumos. Anyone who does melacha, anyone who does labor on Shabbos, Yumas will be put to death. And then we're given an example of Malach, Alo Sivaru Eish, B'chomash Roseichem B'yom HaShabbos. You shouldn't burn fire in all of your dwelling places on the Shabbos day. Meshech Chochma focuses on an aspect of the Pasuk which I know never really bothered me or occurred to me before I saw the question of the Meshech Chochma, but that's the derech of the Meshech Chochma. So that's the Meshech Chochma, throughout Chumash, whenever it talks about the death penalty, it always says, mos, you must. Right? Almost always. There's a double usage of the term, he will be put to death. Mos, you must. Maka ishva meis, mos, you must. Right? That's commonplace throughout Chumash. Here, it says, kala osebo melacha, you must. Anyone who does melacha on Shabbos will be put to death. Instead of using the double phrase, mos, you must, it's just you must. All right, so you would have told me this, I would have said, okay, it is what it is. Okay, so very, very good. Obviously, you have Tvinska blood in you. Right, so let's take a look at the Meshech Chochma. That's the very first piece on page Kufman Beis, the very first piece in Parshas Vayakhel. So, Shabbos Shabbos and Lashem Kol Osu B'Malacho Yumas. Hinei B'Chol Mokom D'Ksiv Miso K'Siv Mos Yumas. Right? Again, as we said, Meshech Chochma points out, generally speaking, when it talks about the death penalty, it always says, most you must. Right? A double lashon. Levad v'vekomos yotzim min haklal. The only time that it uses you must, just a singular usage of the term, is when there's something unusual about the punishment of death. So, for instance, uksiv hashor yisokel v'gam be'olav you must. Right? It says by yeshor muad, a shor, an axe, which has been habituated to goring people, when the axe goes and gores a human being, so the axe is put to death. V'gam be'olav yumos, and the owner of the axe as well shall die. Right. So the Mechilta hastens to explain to us that it doesn't mean that the owner of the axe is put to death in a court, in a judicial setting. Right, because again, he was negligent for allowing his axe, which already had a history of goring, to go out and gore people. However, begam be'olav yumos means bidei shamayim, right? V'zeh miso bidei shamayim kidedarish b'mechilta. Yumos means he will die, but not that he will be put to death. Right. So in other words, I think that's really the distinction. If you had to capture in English, yumos means he will die through some other agency, in this case, Misa Bidei Shamayim, right, in heavenly death. Mos Yumos, the double Lashon, means that he will be put to death through a court, right, through a Bezdin, through a Sanhedrin, right? He gives another example. V'gam ha'diksiv v'parashas emor. It says at the end of Parashas emor, which is what? Mos Yumos means that he will be put to death by a court. You must, by itself, means that he will die in some other fashion. Right? V'chein ha'diksiv v'parashas emor, v'umake behema yishalneno, v'umake adam yumos. Similarly, you have this pasuk in emor. Make behema yishalneno, one who kills an animal will have to make payment for it. V'umake adam yumos, but one who kills a person will die. Now again, there... it has to be kills, right? Because if it's just wounds, right, so then he won't be put to death. right? But that this pasuk on the surface would seem to fly in the face of the idea which is being developed by the Meshech Chachma, because Makeh Adam Yumos, if it means that if you kill a person, you will die, but not that you will be put to death in a judicial fashion, then that's not true. Right? In other words, you know, certainly if there's Adam and Hasra, the murderer is put to death. So says the Meshech Chachma, now the truth is this pasuk actually proves my contention, that you must always means that he'll die, but not through a judicial procedure. Who could the darish Tana de Vechizkiya? This fits in with the drasha that we have from Tana de Vechizkiya. Sha'al chayve misos shogigin sheyomus v'lo yishalem, d'chiyuv misa she'olav potro min hatashlumin. The Gemara quotes Tana de Vechizkiya, the Gemara Sanhedrin quotes Tana de Vechizkiya, it's explaining this pasuk in the following fashion. Right? We know there's a halacha called Kamle b'derabba mine. Kamle b'derabba mine means that if a person incurs a chiyuv misa and a chiyuv tashlumen, if he incurs the death penalty and monetary punishment at the same time, the monetary obligation is waived because of the death penalty. In Rosh Hashanah, right? I go and I shoot somebody, and the person dies. Right? Don't try this at home. Right? So I killed the person. I also wrecked his shirt. Right? So Luchari, you should say that the murderer should be put to death, and he should also make restitution to the estate. You can't really help the guy who was shot, but he should make restitution to the estate for the shirt which was damaged. So comes the principle of Kamle, but the Rabbi Binayim says, no, it's not true. Whenever you incurred a Chi of Misa and a Chi of Tashlumen simultaneously, the Chi of Misa always, you know, knocks out the Chi of Tashlumen. Comes Tana de Vechizkiya and raises the following issue. Let's say Reuven kills Shimon accidentally, and he also destroys his shirt in the process, right? He wasn't premeditated. Aiming at Shimon. He was shooting off his gun, he was hunting ducks, and turns out Shimon was a big duck, he didn't duck, right? So Shimon is killed accidentally, right? And also his shirt is wrecked. So comes the Tana de Vechizkiya and says the principle of Kamalei b'derabba means that whenever there is in theory a Chiyuv Misa, which applies to Reuven. Now, again, the Chi of Misa in this case is not going to be carried out because the killing of Shimon was accidental. But whenever there's a Chi of Misa that applies even in some sense to Reuven, that already exempts the Reuven from paying Tashlumen. Now, Tana de Vechizkiya learns that from this pasuk. Makir behema yishalmeno. If you kill an animal, you have to pay money. But makir adam yumos velo yishalmeno. Right? In other words, the way he dashes the pasuk is that one who kills a human being, right, dies, but does not pay tashlum. Oh. Now, says the Meshech Chachma, let's just follow this through for a moment. How did Tana de Vechizkiya get out of this pasuk that even when the murder takes place accidentally, in other words, the murderer is an accidental murder, it's b'shogeg, so he's not really chayiv misa. How did Tana de Vechizkiya see in this pasuk that even a chi of misa b'shogeg exempts from tashlumin? So says the Meshech Chachma, it's consistent with what I'm saying. Makeh adam yumos doesn't mean that the one who kills a person is put to death. It means, on some theoretical level, he's liable for the death penalty. What is such a scenario where one is theoretically liable for the death penalty, but the court does not actually impose the death penalty? Well, that's the case where the person would kill b'shogeg. In other words, he's incurred a type of punishment which in theory should make him chayiv misa, but he's exempted from misa by virtue of the fact that it was done b'shogeg. So, now, says the Meshech Chachma, the reasoning of Tana de Vechizkiya actually only really makes sense because they're working with this idea which I have, that most yumos means the best that executes the person. Yumos means that there's some kind of he will die, or he is deserving of death, or something of that nature, but the penalty is not actually carried out.
But doesn't he have to go to the Mikvah? Isn't that a punishment for doing something that would generate a shogeg, in other words, being careless?
Yeah.
So he does have two punishments. One is paying for the shirt, and one is going to the Mikvah.
But he doesn't pay for the shirt. Right, that's the point. In other words, you know, the fact that in theory...
I'm not going to this word. I'd rather pay for a shirt than have to spend my...
Right. I mean, not even, I'd also rather pay for a shirt than be executed by a vendor, right? But, you know, it's not an either or. In other words, the point is that, you know, the theoretical exemption, the theoretical chiyuv misa exempts whatever other chiyuvim are there. Right? So again, this is just the second example of the point that Meshach Chochma is making. Very, very interesting point. That again, yumas by itself, without most yumas, means that there is a penalty of death, but it's not actually going to be imposed in any way.
Just a general rule about human bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Only tour from the mom from Kirbisa, or when you say that applies for two simultaneous people that
don't have to be. The Gemara Kesubas talks about how it could, whether or not it applies to Malkus, you know, Malkus. Right. Right, right.
The same reason?
I don't remember. You have to look there in the Gemara Kesubas. I think it may not be related. I think they quote other psukim for that, you know, for the question of loka mishalim. Right. So, in the Kamala of the Rabbim, it seems to be, you know, unique to Chiyuvei Misa. There's a discussion about Kares and Chiyuv Tashlum, and I think that's Rabbi Chuna ben Akana over there. In the third back of Ksubas, if I remember correctly. In other words, there's some discussion on that level, right? But Malkus, I think they relate to different psukim. Right? Another way to address this last pasuk, Make Adam Yumas, V'yitachen de Make Adam Koi Al Ubrin. Maybe Make Adam Yumas refers to abortion. Right? In other words, one who kills a person will die. The reference to the person is not to a regular person. It refers to an ogre. It refers to a fetus. Shekeng siv shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam haynu uber damo yishofech. Right? It says after all in Parshas Noach that shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam, one who spills the blood of man who is in man, in other words, a fetus who's in another person, right? Damo yishofech, his blood will be killed. A ben Noach is killed, is chayiv misa for abortion, for aborting a fetus. The Yisrael nimsa misasa l'dinei shamayim. But a Jew who aborts a fetus, although he's not subject to the death penalty, he is subject to misa b'dinei shamayim. So here too, this would also be a way of interpreting the pasuk. One which, interestingly enough, is not advanced by Chazal. Right? In other words, Chazal don't see in this pasuk umake adam yumas a reference to abortion, but says the Meshech Chochma, if you follow my rule that yumas means some kind of chiyuv misa, which is not actually enforced by a bezdin, you know, the hapala subara, you know, abortion would be an example that fits that criteria, those criteria, and could fit into the pasuk over here as well. Right? So those are three ways of, three examples, so to speak, of where yumas can be interpreted as a non-judicial chiyuv misa. Now the question is going to be, of course, how does that relate to over here? Just coming back to the starting point. After all, it says that ha'osa bo melacha yumas, anyone who does melacha on Shabbos will die. That's not really accurate the way the Meshech Chochma is setting things up. Kala osa melacha mos yumas. We know that Shabbos carries with it a judicial penalty of death. It carries with it a chi of skila. So then why in this pasuk, according to the Meshech Chochma's logic, should it just say yumas and not say most yumas? What's that? How do you know there's no eidim? Maybe there were eidim, right? In other words, in a case where there were eidim and hasra, why shouldn't there be a chi of misa over here as well? Now, this happens to be a case. Okay, so he's going to expand it though. In other words, you could say like that, but then that would limit it somewhat. He's going to develop a very, very interesting idea over here as to Davka, this case, why it should be yumas.
And you were contrasting that a Jew doing abortion versus a non-Jew doing abortion.
So
a giant for us to kill an elf? When
you're Deinu Tekifa, when we have the ability to do so. In other words, if you imagine a restored Sanhedrin in Eretz Israel, so the Sanhedrin would have jurisdiction over the Jews and the non-Jews, you know, living in Eretz Israel, and it would judge them accordingly, right? But here he says the following fascinating thing: but here it describes the penalty for being Machal Shabbos, and it just says Yumos. It doesn't say Mos Yumos. Nira the almeleches hamishkan koi. V'terem shehu kam hamishkan. Lo hoya noeg din dinei nefashos. Remember, this reference to Shabbos takes place before the Mishkan has been erected. And he said, and you know, before there was a Mishkan, it was not possible. There was no Sanhedrin that would be done dinei nefashos. Why? She'ein kohen ve'ein mishpat k'dedarish perak dalad miso Sanhedrin and beis on beis. Right, the Gemara Sanhedrin darshins. If you look in Parshas Shoftim later on in Sefer Devarim, it says whenever you have an issue that has to be handled by the Sanhedrin, v'kam tov yoliso el hamakom asher yivchar Hashem uvaso el hakohen asher yiyeh b'yomim ahem. You should come to the kohen who's in those days. And, you know, they will decide, they will adjudicate the cases, they will, you know, paskin, if need be, even chiyuvei misa. So says the Gemara Sanhedrin, if there is a kohen, so there could be chiyuvei misa, right? If there's no kohen, so there are no chiyuvei misa. In other words, after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, so the Sanhedrin no longer is being done in nefashos. Now, we know, by the way, that in point of fact, historically, the second Beis HaMikdash, they stopped being Don Din and Nefashos 40 years before the Churban HaBayis, right? They moved out of the Lishkas HaGazis, which was the only way in which they would be able to be Don Din and Nefashos when they were in the Lishkas HaGazis. But, you know, the Gemara says fundamentally, you know, they could have chosen to stay there till the Churban, but once the Churban came, then they would have been totally prevented from having been done din in nefashos, because one can only be done din in nefashos in the presence of the Beis HaMikdash. So we usually think about that as something that's relevant after the Churban. Comes the Meshech Chachma and says, you know, but on the other end of things, before there is a Mishkan, it's implied that din in nefashos would also not apply. Right. Right, but there had to be, you know, it's kind of like a battery. In other words, the Sanhedrin has to be in the Beis HaMikdash for Sanhedros of 23 to be able to don din nefashos wherever they are. Right. So we usually think of that notion that that the Beis HaMikdash and the ability to be don din nefashos are linked. We usually think of that in terms of the end of time, right? That means once the Churban happened, so you can't have Din Nefashos anymore. Comes the Meshech Chachma and says, you know, but it works in the other direction as well. Prior to the erection of any type of Mikdash, and that was prior to the erection of the Mishkan, so one can't be done Din Nefashos either.
So to start with a period of time between Matan Torah, I
guess. Right, in other words, right, so that's exactly what he's saying over here. In other words, from Matan Torah, from Shabbos HaBetamos. Why Shabbos HaBetamos?
He said that from Matan Torah to Shabbos HaBetamos,
there is not going to be any condition. We're going to come back to that tonight. He says it a little bit differently than Meshech Chachma. It's not quite as stark as that. I don't remember what I said last week. Which context did I say that?
That's something in Shabbat Shalom is when there was a need for the place on the dish, and before that,
Okay, we're going to see a piece tonight in Vayakha where he talks about that, but he puts a slightly different twist on it. So if I said it differently last week, I don't remember exactly what the context was. I said it much last week.
It was repeated again.
Rabbi Lo Yachlon Ish
Esar Sicha. That there would be a special, that no, none of the nations would come and take
right.
their land. Why did it have to be repeated? Because had there not been a Egel, no other nation would have started up with them.
Right.
Now that they had to take the Egel,
right.
then they needed that special...
I don't remember relating that to the need for the Beis HaMikdash or not.
But
actually, we
had it not been like the Egel, they right. would have gone in and they
right.
would have been secure. But
right.
now that...
Right. Yeah, but I think we'll actually we're going to see he's going to touch on that point directly a little bit later tonight in one of the pieces we're going to see.
From whatever point in time.
Right. Until that HaMishkan, there were no chiyuv emisa. There were no chiyuv emisa. Right. That's exactly what he's pointing out over here, and he's going to extend that. Not just to this particular discussion by Shabbos, but you'll see in a moment. The Oz Lohoya Adayin HaMishkan, the Lohoya Aaron Kohen, right, says the Meshech Chochma. So, again, up until the erection of the Mishkan, so there was no Mishkan, Aaron was not the Kohen, there was no Kohen. The Rachmi Soso Bidei Shamayim. So the only punishment that a person could get would be Misa Bidei Shamayim because there was no way to impose a judicial Chiyuv Misa Bidei Adam. Right? So Mimela says the Meshech Chochma, the statement over here that anyone who's Mechalel Shabbos Yumos will die means Misa Bidei Shamayim, and it's only relevant in this particular context because the minute the Mishkan goes up, it's going to go from Yumos to most Yumos, right? So it's very specific to this particular point in history that the Pasuk says, the person who's Mechalel Shabbos, Kala Osevo Melacha Yumos, if we just wait two parshios from now, that will become most Yumos. Then he goes on to explain something very fascinating. U'mishim hachi osi shafi hoda omer gabi ego b'yuma, zovach v'kotar b'sayif, v'lo dono som ka'ovdei avarazara b'skilo. The Gemara Yuma comments on the fact that those who participated in making the egel were killed how? By the sword. Right? In other words, Moshe gathers together the Bnei Levi, and he says, you know, Ivru l'shar l'shar b'machaneh, v'hirgu ish achiv. They didn't stone them to death, which would have been ordinarily the punishment of Ovdei Avodah Zarah. They were killed with the sayif, they were killed with the sword. Right? Why taka did they kill the ones who did the egel with the sword, as opposed to imposing upon them the din skila, which ordinarily is the chi of nisa for avodah zara? So he says, it's consistent with what I said a moment ago. She'oz adai lo haya koin v'lo haya din nefashos. You couldn't have judged them with skila because skila is the penalty which is imposed by bezdin, you know, for as the chi of nisa for avodah zara. And again, as we said before, it's impossible to have a Misas Bezdin at this point in time by the Egel until the Mishkan is going to be erected. I see you'll ask me the question, so how could you kill them all together? Right? He did kill them Besayif, right? So how is he allowed to kill them Besayif?
Well,
so he says like this. Rach shebnei Noach kodem matan Torah gam kein nergu al avodah zarah. V'zeh Sayif. Okay. But there's a law that predates Matan Torah, the law of Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, which includes with it the concept of dinim, right? That there is a court system to judge B'nei Noach who violate the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. And according to the laws of B'nei Noach, any infraction of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach is subject to Misa B'sayif, to the person, the perpetrator, being killed with the sword. So in other words, although the judicial system of Sanhedrin was not in place yet, Moshe Rabbeinu could still make use of the judicial system of Bnei Noach. So according to Dinei Bnei Noach, those who had worshipped Avodah Zarah could be put to death to Sayif. So in other words, everything was being done, Mamish Alpi Halacha, you know, down to the, you know, every T was crossed, every I was dotted, right? The ones who were over Avodah Zarah by the Egel could not be punished B'dinei Yisrael, because the Sanhedrin as such wasn't ready to go yet, because that was going to only kick in once the Mishkan was built. And so they had to be judged as B'nai Noach. Bnei Noach are chayiv in Avodah Zarah as well, but Bnei Noach who perform acts of Avodah Zarah are subject to Misa B'Sayif. So in other words, he used that judicial system, which actually did work.
So was it out in the issue? Was Moshe who gave the commandment to kill?
It was not a unique commandment. It was a function of the fact that they were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So those who are Ovdei Avodah Zarah are judged as Bnei Noach. You don't have it explicitly, no. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Levim, but the way he's understanding is Moshe Rabbeinu is just applying the laws that would apply to any Ben Noach who was Oved Avodah Zarah. So that one is allowed to do.
Why is it called the Avodah Zarah for the non-Jews? And the Avodah Zarah that they were guilty
of? Yeah, I mean, again, the only discussion which you have with regard to a non-Jew that maybe it's a little bit different is that maybe a non-Jew is not muzar ala shituf, that maybe he's allowed to combine God with other things, right? That itself is very, very questionable whether that's true. I mean, most of the achronim say that Ben Noach is not allowed to be Ovid Avodah Zarah b'shituf either, as he can't. Not only can he not worship another god, he can't worship another god in conjunction with the Ribbono Shel Olam either. And here, I guess the assumption is that if you assume that the Egel was Avodah Zarah, they were exchanging, HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the Egel Hazav. Again, not all Rishonim understand that it was Avodah Zarah, but if you go with the Mahalath that it was Avodah Zarah, which clearly he is, I think the assumption is that they were accepting the Egel, as a Tmura, as a substitute, Cholila, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, you didn't have Rov Yisrael doing it, right? It was the perpetrators are right. I mean, Kishloshes Alfei Ish, right? There were 3,000 people, right? 3,000 people out of 600,000, right? If you count all the women and children and whatnot, right? But certainly, it was not a Rov, it was not a majority of the people who were responsible directly. Aldo Marisha. The Grand Sanhedrin learns that from a pasuk. How'd you get on? I guess protects you. I mean, how did you get out? How does anything work? I mean, was it carried out? That I don't know. But certainly the system was set up. That it should be adjudicated from Adam. Yeah. No, but by that time the Mishkan is already set up. Right. So it's way. Right, way back before the Hakamas HaMishka. So what do you do with the... Right. I wonder if he talks about Mekoshesh. Yeah. He has one little piece, Mekoshesh. He doesn't talk about it.
It always be good to say that it was like a Rasha and accept. Rashi is supposed to break lines to Darshan to make this look like an actual president.
Yeah.
Right.
Everything was done kadosh v'chadir.
Right. It's really done like a ma'aseh.
Right, so I'm not sure. I mean, maybe he would learn not like Rashi, but that, you know, the event, the Mekoshish, took place at a later point in time, as is implicit in the Psukim. I mean, the fact that it's stuck in Parshas Shlach, as opposed to back in Parshas Bishalach, you know, makes it sound like it took place at a much later point, you know, when Klal Yisrael were in the Midbar. Right? So, again, I don't know how you'd fit it in with Rashi's interpretation that we talked about the second Shabbos out. Right, L'chari, there is no way to reconcile that with the Meshech Chochmah, so maybe he just learns that that it happened later on. Yeah, right. So I don't know, maybe he had a Medrash that argued on that, I don't know, but it's a good question. Anyway, so that's actually just the first part of the Meshech Chochmah's discussion about Shabbos, right? Again, this very, very fascinating Chiddush that Yumos means he will die in some way other than Misas Bezdin, and that means that throughout Chumash, whenever that term is used. And the very interesting Chiddush, that specifically over here, prior to the Hakamas HaMishkan, there was no such thing as Chiyuvei Misas Bezdin, or there was no such thing as Misas Bezdin, it's a judicial execution by Bezdin, that applied by Shabbos, and that applied by the Egel itself, in the way in which they executed the people. You know, they were relying on Dinei B'nei Noach, you know, but the Dinei Sanhedrin had not yet begun at that particular time. Let's just skip the next paragraph. I want to see Hinei Parshas Kisa, where he talks about what Rebbe Sanhefer referenced before, the placement of Shabbos and the Mishkan next to one another. Hinei Parshas Kisa, Ne'emar Shabbos Achar Meleches HaMishkan. Last week, when we learned about Shabbos, it was following the discussion of the Meleches HaMishkan, meaning all of Truma, Tetzaveh, and the beginning of Parshas Kisisa dealt with the Mishkan, and only afterwards were we given the commandment of Shabbos at the very end. Over here in Vayakhel, the opposite is true. Meleches HaMishkan achar Shabbos. Right? That the Shabbos comes first and the Meleches HaMishkan follows. Sefer Chassidim already talks about this. So Meshech Chochmah says as follows. One might say, So first, says the Meshech Chochmah, one might have said that the Mishkan is actually Doche Shabbos. We know that the halacha is that the making of the Mishkan is not Doche Shabbos, that they had to, that's how we learn all of Melechus Shabbos, that they had to set aside the construction of the Mishkan for Shabbos. But says the Meshech Chochmah, but you might have thought otherwise with the following svara. What would be the svara? The svara is that since the Melechus HaMishkan was ongoing and clearly stretched out over many Shabbosos, you might have thought, look, we need to get this Mishkan up and running. And, you know, the time that we have to build the Mishkan, by definition, is going to include several Shabbosos. So maybe that's, you know, maybe there's a built-in heter over there that since HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the Mishkan ASAP, and the only way to do that would be to build it on Shabbos, maybe that would, you know, make it mutter. But then he suggests the following. V'yitachin, de'avodo hutra Shabbos, v'shun de'mishkan halo shara hakadosh v'ashkinu mitzu yisham. Right. He addresses the following paradox, in a sense. You're not allowed to build the Mishkan on Shabbos, but you are allowed to run the Mishkan on Shabbos, the Chilul Shabbos notwithstanding. Right? I mean, every single Shabbos in the Mishkan, and later in the Beis HaMikdash, they engaged in actions which, under normal circumstances, would be Chilul Shabbos. You shecht karbanos, right? You burn fire on the Mizbeach. You know, you're doing all kinds of stuff which would, under normal circumstances, be Chilul Shabbos. So why is it that building the Mishkan is not Doche Shabbos, but operating the Mishkan is Doche Shabbos, right? It's very similar to the paradox that he asked last week. You know, you can be Mechalel Shabbos to save a person's life, but when the person himself is Mechalel Shabbos, you kill him, right? And here I think it's even more poignant, right? So which comes first, the Mishkan or Shabbos? Which is the greater value? So he says, let me explain to you how the paradox works. Because the Mishkan, Yitachin Deva Avoda Hutra Shabbos, the reason that Avoda and the Mishkan is permitted on Shabbos is because the Mishkan al Shor Akor Vashkinam Mitzu Yisham. The Mishkan is the place where the Shechina rests, where God's glory rests in this world. Shabbos is testimony for all mankind that God created the world out of nothing. The avoda in the Mishkan, in the Mikdash, symbolizes or demonstrates the fact that God not only created the world, but runs the world. He's mashkiach in the world. I mean, the fact, first of all, that there were so many nisim associated with the Beis HaMikdash. And the very symbolism of the Beis HaMikdash, you know, the fact that the Lechem Aponim represented the parnasa that God was going to bring down to the world, right? The whole notion of the avoda and the Mikdash, you know, demonstrates the idea, represents and demonstrates the idea that there's hashkacha in the world. So says the Meshech Chachma, right? The notion of hashkacha is that God did not just create the world once, but God is constantly recreating the world. Every single second, there's a new creation. God is sustaining the world constantly. Ka'amur, li'osei orim gedolim, asher mizeh londu b'tfilo ha'mechadesh b'tuvo, v'chol yom tamid ma'aseh bereishis. It should be ma'aseh bereishis with a hey at the end. Right? But we say in the davening, you know, after all, we say every morning that God is mechadesh b'tuvo b'chol yom tov in ma'aseh bereishis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu renews the work of creation every single day. As it says, ka'amur, le'osei orim gedolim, not le'osa orim gedolim, not that God made the great luminaries, but God makes constantly the great luminaries. So in other words, the idea of hashkacha is God's constant involvement in the world. In a sense, the idea of hashkacha already includes the idea of Shabbos, which is, you know, the notion that God created, past tense, the world, right? So in other words, avoda is even a more powerful message than the message which is shared by Shabbos. V'sham ma'on Hashem yisparach, v'sham ha'shlam v'bonal b'nisi beis zivulach, v'chein hacha machshir k'mo kloyes ha'omer, v'chavatoso v'afi ashtei alechem, dochin Shabbos. Right? Because that's why anything involved with the running of the Mikdash, the running of the Mishkan, even things that are kind of incidental, you know, such as the baking of the Shtei HaLechem, which can take place on Shabbos, or the various preparations of the Minchas HaOmer, which again are secondary, they're not the actual Avoda itself, they're Machshirim. They simply lay the groundwork for the Avoda. However, anything involved with the Avoda is Docha Shabbos. Why? So again, Avoda is about God Hashkacha. Shabbos is about God creating the world. It's Bichlal Masayimana, right? In other words, 100 is included in 200. In other words, if you have the Avoda, which demonstrates God's Hashkacha in the world, you no longer need the message of Shabbos while the Avoda is going on, because the Avoda communicates the idea which is included in Shabbos as well. The Avoda includes communicates the idea of God's Hashkacha, which includes the idea of God creating the world, which is Shabbos. Okay, so that's why Avoda is Docha Shabbos. So why isn't the building of the Mishkan Docha Shabbos? Aval binyan ha-Mishkan v'ha-Mikdash lo Docha Shabbos. Right? Until the Mikdash is actually built, the Shechina is not resting in Klal Yisrael yet, because it is the presence of the Mikdash which will bring down the Shechina. The Shechina only comes down through the Mikdash. So you can't push aside Shabbos until the Shechina actually comes down, because it's the avoda associated with the presence of the Shechina which demonstrates God's Hashkacha. Until that's in place, so you can't push aside Shabbos, because you need the message of Shabbos that God created the world. Right? So that's just an interesting way that he has to explain this paradox. The building of the Mishkan, it's not that, you know, avoda and the building of the Mishkan are not the same thing. The building of the Mishkan is what's going to enable that bringing down of the Shechina and communicating the message of Hashkacha. But by the avoda, it's actually there already. So the actual message of Hashgacha is more powerful than Shabbos, but laying the groundwork for that message of Hashgacha does not push aside Shabbos. It sounds like for the time that the Mishkan was taken down, that, again, whatever this means exactly, the Shekhinah that was associated with the Mishkan would be allowed to erect it on Shabbos. Right. So I think the answer to that is no. So I guess what he would say, the Meshech Chachma, is that whatever Shekhinah was associated with the Mishkan temporarily was disbanded or, you know, pulled out when the Mishkan was also broken down as well. Right. So that's what we mentioned, I think, last week or the week before, that the idea from the Kuzari, there are different madregas of Shekhinah. I mean, clearly, the whole time that Klal Yisrael in the Midbar, surrounded by the Anoni HaKavod, there was a certain degree of Shekhinah presence which was there. But the very, I guess, the active Shekhinah, you know, which was present when the Mishkan was erect, you know, was, you know, Taka did leave, you know, for the time that the Mishkan was taken down. Right, but that was last week, right? Pikuach Nefesh and Shabbos that he spoke about. Yeah, I know, okay, but check the tape, right? You know, it's the last week we spoke about, you know, the Meshech Chochma's idea why Pikuach Nefesh is Ocha Shabbos. Right, so we'll
I'm not talking about that, I'm just saying, there's no comparison basically between
that. No, he's not connecting it to what we spoke about last week. He's talking about the paradox that running the Mishkan is Ocha Shabbos. Yeah, okay, yeah, but that's different paradox, right? Last week's paradox. Okay, but now he takes it one step further, right? So this is beautiful in its own right. But now he takes it one step further and says a tremendous chiddush. So, Avol Kodem, She'asu B'nei Yisrael Ha'Egel, before the Egel was made, Halo Ha'ya Hatznai, B'chol Makom, Asher Azkir Shmi Avoy Lecho Ve'Rachticho, God told the Jewish people by Har Sinai, you know where my Shekhinah is? It's everywhere. Right, this is the point we were talking about before. My Shekhinah is everywhere, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. B'chol makom asher azkir shmi avoy lecho ve'rachticha. I'm not limited to a Mishkan or anything like that. I'm all over the place. V'ashchina hoysa shara b'Yisrael shelo b'emsos ha-Mishkan. The Shekhinah dwelt in Klal Yisrael even without the Mishkan. Aye, so there was no need for a Mishkan? No. So this is where he says it a little bit differently. The Shekhinah dwelt in Klal Yisrael even without the Mishkan. The Mishkan's purpose was much less spectacular. There was a need for a Mishkan for Beis HaMikdash even before the Egel. In other words, the tzivui, the commandment to build a Mishkan, predates the Egel. But God's immediate, you know, God's original plans for the Mishkan were much more limited than they ended up becoming. Originally, God said, look, my Shekhinah is equally within every part of Klal Yisrael, but you know, it's good to have a place to get together to worship Hashem. So, for kind of like pragmatic purposes, we'll make a Mishkan so you can come together and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this particular place. But you know, in terms of the notion of Hashras HaShekhinah, the Shekhinah dwells in Klal Yisrael, you know, irrespective of whether or not there's a Mishkan. Right? So, that was before the Egel. Raku ayo mokam yuchel avol ashuras ha-shechinah, avol lo be'ofen sha'al yodo yizku liros be'kovet Hashem yisbarach. It's not that they needed the Mishkan to see the glory of Hashem, ki b'nei Yisrael ve'atzmam heim hoyu ha-ma'on la-Hashem yisbarach ve'heichal Hashem heima. Like, Klal Yisrael themselves were the place of the Kedusha of the Shechinah. Right? By the way, if you recall, way back in Parshas Vayera, the Meshech Chachma said a very similar thing with regard to the relationship between the Shekhinah and the Avos. Right? He quoted the Maimer Chazal that Ha'avos hein hein merkava la Shekhinah. Right? The Avos are, so to speak, the chariot the receptacle for the Shechina, and he develops the idea very, very literally that the house of Avraham Avinu itself was a almost like a Makom HaMikdash from a halachic perspective. So, you know, this is a theme which he, in a sense, really comes back to over here. What was true of Avraham Avinu, right, was true of Gans Klal Yisrael before the Chet HaEgel. The Machane Yisrael before the Chet HaEgel was a Mikdash. Right? Basically, you know, there wasn't a need. There wasn't a need to have a specific place for Hashra'as HaShechina. The whole Machane itself was a place for Hashra'as HaShechina. So then, Oz HaYobinyan HaMishkan Ke'echon Miprotei Tzorecho Avoda Acharei Binyan HaMishkan Achar HaEgel Shekevon Shashra'as HaShechina Chvor Hashem Yisbar Chofif Al Bnei Yisrael Called the binyan hamishkan, im kain tu avoda v'chol tzrocheha af binyan hamishkan doche shabbos. Lochei ne'emar mishkan called him l'shabbos. So he says here a fascinating chiddush. Says the Meshech Chachma, whereas after the egel, building the mishkan would not be doche shabbos because the shechina was not yet resting in Klal Yisrael prior to the building of mishkan. And the only reason that Avoda is Doche Shabbos is because once the Mishkan is up and running, that's already the place of the Hashra'as HaShechina. And in the place of Hashra'as HaShechina, you can push aside Shabbos, right? However, prior to the Chet HaEgel, when the whole Machane Yisrael was suffused with the Shechina, even before the Mishkan was built, so then you could build the Mishkan even on Shabbos. Right? This is another thing that changed with the ego. Right? Prior to the Chet HaEgel, the Mishkan was allowed to be built on Shabbos because building the Mishkan was just the equivalent of one of the aspects of the Avodah. The Shechina was already Shorah and Klal Yisrael, and building the Mishkan was kind of just like, you know, baking the Shtei Alechem or some other secondary aspect of the Avodah. I'm sorry? Right, once the Shechina is here, so it's carte blanche, you know, you could do whatever you want, right? By the way, you find such a concept, you know, call it tikkun derabbanan, get in the raisa tikkun, we have a concept, ein shvus b'mikdash, right? That even once, you know, Chazal came along with dinim derabbanan, you know, they didn't apply their dinim derabbanan to the whole locale of the Beis HaMikdash, whether or not it was directly involved with the Avodah, perhaps that's related to the same idea that the Meshech Chacham wants to bring out over here. A place of Hashra'as HaShechina, you know, just caused the Shabbos to fall by the wayside. Chazal applied that when they created the concept of Ein Shvus B'Mikdash, that Dinim D'Rabbanan are not going to be applicable in the Mikdash.
So we would not have had the Lamekes B'Lachos.
Right, so how would that have worked? I don't know. I mean, I think the Lamekes B'Lachos are the definition of what, you know, the Malachas Shabbos is. Right. Right, so I don't know. I mean, it's hard to imagine that Shabbos would have been defined differently. But I guess there would have been some other way that these Lamites Malachas would have been linked back to Shabbos.
How
do you get the Lamites Malachas?
Right. So has that fit in with the whole?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, I don't know. I think you would have to say, according to the Meshech Chachma, that the connection between Lamites Malachos and Melechus HaMishkan is almost like coincidental, right? In other words, that, you know, because theoretically, I'm sorry? Right, in other words, it's not a fundamental connection. Right, in other words, you know, this is the definition of Shabbos, these 39 Malachos. They happen to be the same 39 Malachos involved in the building of the Mishkan. But Enoch Inami, at one point in history, you could have built the Mishkan on Shabbos, you know, had it not been for the Chet HaEgel. Right? I hear the difficulties in that, but maybe that's what the Meshech Chachma would have to say. So that's what he says, right? Because prior to the Chet HaEgel, you could have built the Mishkan on Shabbos. And that's why, you know, earlier in Chumash, it's Shruma, Tetzaveh, you know, Kisiso, the beginning that talks about the other aspects of the Mishkan, and only afterwards, at the very, very end, the Tzivui of Shabbos, because they're presented in order of importance, right? Truma Tetzaveh, you know, the concept of building the Mishkan is so important that Shabbos is presented literally as an afterthought, right? In other words, build the Mishkan, and yeah, there is this thing called Shabbos, but don't worry about it. You know, for the purposes of building the Mishkan, you can build the Mishkan for, you know, into Shabbos. It's only once we get to Parshas Vayakil, which is post Cheto Egel, so now Shabbos has to come before the Parshios discussing the Mishkan, because now the order has been reversed. Now Shabbos comes first, and you can't violate Shabbos in order to make the Mishkan. And now, once you got that down pat, now I'll tell you all the halachas that that are involved in the actual building of the Mishkan. After the Cheto Egel, the only way that Klal Yisrael merited having the Shekhinah was through the vehicle of the Mishkan. Im kein lo nidcheis Shabbos bevinyin haMishkan. Right, so therefore, after the Cheto Egel, Shabbos was not pushed aside by the building of the Mishkan. That's why Shabbos is before in Parshas Vayakel. Now, the Meshachachma, you know, hastens to point out that actually Rashi disagrees with him, right? Because he says, "Omnam Rashi v'sisa yalef me'achas Shabbos tishmaru the ein binyan beis hamikdash doches Shabbos." Right. If you look at Rashi back in Parshas Kisisa, you know, the Parsha of Shabbos, which according to the Meshech Chochma, is telling you that Shabbos is pushed aside because of the Binyan Mishkan. There, Rashi makes the point, Acha Shabbos Tishmaru, but you should keep my Shabbos. So Rashi says it means that don't build the Mishkan on Shabbos. You know, I gave you all these Tzivuyim about the Mishkan, but don't build it on Shabbos. Aye, so Rashi's against me. So says the Meshech Chochma, never fear. Ulam b'sof yuma, yolif me'achas shabzos ha'tishmaru, lima'et pikuach nefesh, d'doches Shabbos. The Gemara in Yuma has a different drasha from Parshas Kisisa. It says, achas shabzos ha'tishmaru, keep my shabbosos, but says the Gemara in Yuma, but pikuach nefesh is doches Shabbos. So in other words, says the Meshech Chochma, look, if the Gemara over there in Yuma learns something else out, from that pasuk, so I'm off the hook. You know, I'm not obligated to accept Rashi's interpretation over there. Right. So again, a fascinating presentation on many, many fronts. You know, about the nature of the Mishkan, about, you know, the relationship between Shabbos and the Mishkan, about what changed by the Cheto Egel, which again we saw already last week. Right. The Meshech Chochma, you know, really focuses on this idea that, you know, Judaism in a sense changed very dramatically. Pre-Egel and post-Egel, there were a lot of, you know, differences between our status prior to the Egel and our status after the Egel. So again, all of these concepts come together, each of them very, very fascinating in their own right. Oh, that's interesting. Like, let's say Pesach would be Doche Shabbos. Right. Interesting. Yeah. Maybe. I'm not sure, but I mean, maybe. I guess if there were certain srochim for Pesach that needed to be done on Shabbos, I don't know, you're saying like cooking? Ochel Nefesh. Right. Maybe Ochel Nefesh would be mutter on Pesach that comes on Shabbos, right? Maybe something like that. Right. Maybe that fact would be true. Wanted to take a look. Sorry? You can't look back. Yeah. I wanted to take a look on page Kuf Nun Vav. We don't have a lot of time, but we'll try to get in at least a little bit of this piece. Vayat B'tzalel es ha'ora, the bottom of Kuf Nun Vav. B'tzalel made the Aron. So points out the Meshech Chochma. Mazalok k'siv b'kulu B'tzalel. You know, the only time that Bezalel's name is mentioned with respect to one of the Klei HaMishkan is with the Aron. Bezalel made the Aron. Bezalel made everything, right? So how come Bezalel is mentioned davka with the Aron? Mishum shishor dvarim asu gam acherim v'beis olamim. V'gam v'ayisheni lo'asim. So he says, The other kelim of the Mishkan, of the Mikdash, were made at later points in history by other people. In other words, the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash was not the... I'm sorry? Right, yeah, yeah. Right, so the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash was not the menorah of Bezalel. The menorah certainly in the second Beis HaMikdash was not the menorah of Bezalel. Right? The only keli which was made by Bezalel and only by Bezalel was the Aron. Aval Aron mishenignas od lo asu acher ki ein la asos luchos acheros acherim. V'rak Aron Bezalel hu shikiem l'doros v'lo acher. It fits in with what he spoke about in the last week's parasha. The whole role of the Aron is to house the luchos. So you can't have multiple Aronos, the same way you can't have multiple Luchos. So in history, there was only one Aron. The implication is there's only going to be one Aron. By the Bayis HaShlishi, you know, we're going to reuse the original Aron of Bezalel. So in other words, Bayas Bezalel is the Aron. Bezalel made the Aron, meaning only Bezalel will ever make an Aron. You know, whereas the other Kalim could be made by different artisans, you know, at different times in history. V'tochen od, next paragraph. Very interesting insight which he gives. The Amu Kishabo Goyim Lahecho Mosu Kruvim Urim Zebazer Yasku B'Dvarim Ha'elam Yad Hizimum. Right, it says when the Goyim came in to destroy the Beit HaMikdash, they found the Kruvim wrapped with, you know, in one another's arms, which we know is a sign of the love between Klal Yisrael and the Ribbono Shel Olam, but the you know, the guy who were destroying the Beis HaMikdash said, oh, this is what the Jews are all about, this is what they keep in their Holy of Holies, this, you know, we thought the Jews were monotheists, here they are, a bunch of pagans just like everybody else. These kind of things are in there, and they made light of the Jewish people. Right? So, in other words, the Kruvim in particular were very, very close to Avodah Zarah. Clearly they weren't Avodah Zarah. But, you know, the Kuzari actually, in a different context, writes, what was the difference between the Kruvim and the Egel Azov? God commanded us to make Kruvim, He didn't command us to make an Egel Azov. That's it. Right? In other words, you know, the Kruvim, in potential, could have been a source of Avodah Zarah. Right? V'im kein choshash Hashem Yisbarach Shema Afrei Shechatu Bo Egel Shema Kishiyase Echad Esa Aron Yavo Lehaher Eza Machshava Zorah Anotu L'Darchei Hatzlam So'os V'atzaveyem. You know, you needed someone with so much of Machshava Tahora, such pure thoughts, to build the Aron, the Kaporis and the Kruvim. Because somebody who had even a slightly impure thought could have invested so easily a thought of Avodah Zorah into the making of the Kruvim, because they're so close to Avodah Zarah in a certain sense. So it was imperative that the person who made the Aron be somebody who was totally free from any thoughts of Avodah Zarah whatsoever. That's why Bezalel was chosen. Why? Bezalel was the grandson of Chur. Chur was murdered because he protested against the making of the ego. Im kein mitzvah chinuch v'ateva, shehu sone kol anotim achrei ahevel v'tzir, shum dmus utmuna, uval yovo l'shum achshav azor klal. So Bezalel, from the time that he was a child, right, had a hatred, right, for anyone who would do anything, veer off in the slightest, in the direction of making images, in the sense of Avodah Zarah, my Zayvah died, right, to protect, right, you know, to protect this idea that, you know, you can't use an image to represent God or to substitute for God. My Zayvah was Moshe Nefesh. In order to protect Yiddishkeit against Avodah Zarah, Bezalel was the last person in the world who ever would have invested a thought of Avodah Zarah into the making of the Aron, of the Kruvim, of the Kaparis. That's why it says Bezalel made singular. He didn't let anyone else go near the making of the Aron. Bezalel, who had this fierce anti-Avodah Zarah blood running through his veins, he and only he was allowed to make the Aron and the Kaparis. Well, zeh yevuah shehashem yisparach karmas yetzal egel omer re'ei karasi b'shem b'tzalil v'amalei oso la'asos b'chol melacha. Kshe'omer Moshe Yisrael kosuv la'asos b'chol meleches machsheves. Right? That explains the difference. Back in Parshas Kisisa, it says that God fills up Bezalel with the ability to do kol milocha, and then when Moshe introduces Bezalel to Klal Yisrael, he says he knows how to do kol meleches machsheves. How do we go from milocha to meleches machsheves? So he says, lefiz shezeh hoya achar ha'egel, he also has milocha yitzarek liyos tehora, gam b'ham machshava shlo yaharu shum tzir geshem, v'tavnis demus klal, v'zeh meleches machsheves, shaham machshava, tehei tahora uvrura unakiyya. Right? There was a special, the second time that Bezalel was introduced to Klal Yisrael, it's after the Chet al Egel. After the Chet al Egel, there was a need not only to have a great artisan and a big tzaddik working on the Aron, but specifically he had to be somebody who had machshavos tahoros, who had really pure thoughts in putting together the Aron. So whereas before the Egel, he was just someone who knew how to do molacha, after the Egel, he's somebody who knows how to do meleches machsheves. Not just that he knows how to do the molacha, but the machshavos, the thoughts, the intention is absolutely pure without any admixture of avodah zarah whatsoever.
So, since it wasn't there for Hashem that he was able to do what he did, because Hashem doesn't say Muhammad himself, Hashem invested in him,
right,
the kayak to do what he did. So why not use one of the regular tzaddikim, the Aisha, Ara? They had a couple of guys to choose. Why not have
Right.
Moshe wasn't asking about Daniel, even about Ara.
So I think it's the idea. God gives wisdom to the one who already has wisdom. Meaning, Bezalel had this natural tendency to hate avodah zarah. So you know, Hakadosh Baruch Hu just revved up, you know, the natural tendencies that he had, so that he could you know, do the melechas ha'aron properly.
I thought you were saying because he's an Oman, he's already a man
who worked
with his hands.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you know, the Parshat Shat, he was a craftsman. But yeah, in other words, he already had this tendency. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes the natural tendency that a person has and just, expands on it, you know, embellishes it to enable it to enable the person to do what he has to do. Okay, we'll end here for tonight, and we'll see you next week, Be'ez Hashem, where we can pick up with Parshas Pekudei.